Hello, welcome back to Millennial 2021, and I'm now here with Jim Goad. Now, Jim Goad has never appeared on Millennial before. That's an oversight on my part. He's obviously a well-known figure, well-known name in our circles. Would you object to that description, Jim?
Possibly. I don't know. I never look at it that way. At this point, I try to deflect as much attention as I can. over the years, I've kind of learned that people who seek attention are sick in some ways, and that the people that I admire the most avoid it as much as possible.
Don't get me started. Yeah. Yeah. Fuck. I mean, the amount of sociopathy among each celebrity, it's just unbelievable. God only knows what, like, the world of real celebrity, like Hollywood and all that.
I was supposed to go to acting school. I was supposed to study with the woman who taught Brando and De Niro. And my parents said, no fucking way. I mean, can I use profanities here? I
know. Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I'm kind of glad, because I would have spent the rest of my life with people who pretend they're other people. And that's kind of one of the seven levels of hell.
Mm, it is a bit of a red flag if that's what they're choosing to do for a living. But I mean, I wouldn't want to demonize all actors, because there are actors that I like and all that, and we need them in order to do that job. But clearly there is going to be a certain predisposition. But this is the first time Jim has appeared on Millennial, and I've wanted to have him on for some time. So thank you for appearing, Jim. Would you like to introduce yourself just in your own terms for anyone who doesn't know about you?
Oh, I'm just an epileptic guy from Philly who's written a bunch of books, gotten into trouble. Trouble follows me wherever I go. I'd say about, at this point, 55% of it's self-inflicted. The rest is just an ongoing ripple effect of all the trouble I created. I mean, before we went live, I was telling you my son was in the hospital last week for having seizures, and he had a cavernous malformation. They had to carve into his skull, like they carved into my skull 13 years ago, and remove this giant mass of veins, and he's fine now. But that's typical week in Goadville for me.
Right. Okay. Well, that was something that we discovered that we've got in common before we went on air, is that we're both epileptic. I'm only very mildly epileptic. It seems to rely on a convergence of issues. Like, if I'm stressed, ill, hungry, tired, then, you know, that's probably it. I'm probably going to have a fit. But if I can avoid that, a seizure.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Spaz out, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's okay. And I went 15 years without having any episodes. But, obviously, it's a scary thing. How old were you when it first happened? I think I was about 13 or 14.
I had them all the time, very young, in the middle of the night. And I don't remember them at all. And then it went like 35 years. And I left little weird, spooky hints and stuff I wrote about, you know, is it a brain tumor? Like, when's the big one going to hit? 2008, the big one hit. It was a plum-sized benign brain tumor, and they carved into my skull and removed it. I had three seizures after that. It's been about 10 years, knock on wood. We'll see. But the only good thing about Atlanta is the traffic is so bad. I was driving when I had that seizure, and it was slow enough that I didn't die. That's about it.
Right.
Otherwise, Atlanta's an awful place, and I can't wait to get the hell out of here.
I have heard quite a lot of bad things about it.
Yeah.
They're for demographic reasons, mainly.
Well, you mean black people?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's what I've heard. I mean, I'm not saying that.
Oh, it's like, know, the first time I got here, but it was like I'd landed in Nigeria. Sure. But it's a bland city. The north, I mean, General Sherman destroyed anything that would have been architecturally interesting about it. You could look at the skyline. It might as well be Spokane or Indianapolis. It sprawls like L.A. all over the place. Traffic is awful, as bad as L.A. or D.C., the dumbest hipster scene I've ever seen, and I thought I'd seen them all. There's just nothing compelling about Atlanta, so we're going to get, me and Mrs. Goad are going to get the hell out ASAP. She just sold her condo in New Orleans, and I'm looking to sell this house in Famos. Right. We might go down to the old Jew part of Florida, because I like warm weather. I'm a complete baby in cold weather. I kind of think that Western colonialism started from desire to live in warmer climates. I know that's not very white of me, but I've got something congenital where I just can't stand cold weather. And people don't think it gets cold here, but it does, or at least too cold for me.
Do you have Mediterranean ancestry?
Actually, last time I checked 23andMe, I'm 95.5% English and Irish, and then 4.3% Spanish and Portuguese. And 0.1% on a sign, which I think is they make everyone a Jew.
Right. Yeah. So, where is the Jewish part of Florida? Is that Miami?
Oh my God. No, Miami's where all the people who do bath salts and then get naked on the freeway and eat your face, like the Florida man meme, like Miami.
Fucking hell.
The East Coast of Florida is sort of like LA, cause no one's from there. And they're all running from something. West Coast is where the 90-year-old Ashkenazim come down because they have cheesesteaks there and it's warm. And it's nothing but like well-armed Jews with Trump signs on the Gulf Coast of Florida.
Well, I mean, the Trump 2024, what would you say about that?
I mean, when he fired rockets at Syria, I kind of gave up on caring about the president. And yeah. Obviously, I mean, either he was a liar or presidents really don't have much power. Never really needed I would just culturally, I was interested in him running his mouth. And it kind of gave me hope as a writer, like, wow, you won't get jailed in 10 years for saying these things. But censorship got a lot worse. So maybe I'm just missing that chip where I need a leader. So I don't care. I don't ever get upset about Joe Biden. I realize the country is absolutely falling apart and there's not a hell of a lot I can do. So, you know, getting vexed about it's not going to do much.
No, that's true. I mean, do you think the solution is to not care or to just to be detached?
It's to be realistic about what you can actually achieve. And I don't think you really can do much at this point besides, you know, complain to other people. Over my years, I've only voted for two things which passed. One was Trump as president in 2016. The other was a ballot initiative in California in the late 80s. It was designed to roll back car insurance rates 20%. They found a loophole. I mean, it passed. I'm like, yes, democracy, the people speak. They found a loophole. Within 3 months, I was paying twice. I'm of the opinion that democracy is just riot insurance. It deludes people into thinking they actually have a say, so they don't burn things down.
Yeah, yeah. I think this actually came up in a previous episode, a previous stream here in Millennial, that democracy is all basically a joke. It's a way to keep the masses, to flatter them into thinking that they have a say and that they are taken seriously.
I mean, if you're talking about a little village and should you build a log bridge over the stream, sure. But it's way too big. And America's too much of a demographic and financial catastrophe at this point to for me to feel patriotic at all, anyway. I mean, it's the January 6th guys, they kind of remind me. I live down in the South now. They remind me of the guys who get dressed up in Union and Confederate. It seems to me to be a lost cause. And if that makes me Captain Black Pill or whatever, fine. Call me, like, make whatever meme you want to. I think that's just realistic.
Do you think that America is something that people still, like some people at least, like those Capitol rioters, do you think that America is something that people still want to have faith in but shouldn't?
Oops. But shouldn't? Oh, I thought your sound cut off. I believe that race is real, and I believe that it was created by, you know, my stock, British people, but it just got too complicated to work. And for example, I was born in 1961, June of 1961, the month I was born, all top five TV shows were Westerns. And all I heard about as a kid was the space race. We're going to beat Russia to the moon. It was about expansion and conquering. Everything now is an apology. And I just think that's a sign of an organism that's dying. You know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but that's my observation. Would be glad to be wrong about it, too.
Yeah, I doubt it will come as a surprise to many of my listeners. I mean, it's a well-known thing. I just wondered if your own perspective on it. I mean, obviously, when you were a child, that's the height of
the
baby boomer
era.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. It must have been fabulous to be an American child in the 60s and then a young adult in the 80s. It must have been tremendous.
80s I wasn't too fond of. It was kind of like the plastic 50s. I think the 80s were a reaction to the despair of the 70s, because 70s is when America first started getting kicked in the nuts, started being humiliated on the world stage. Vietnam War was lost. OPEC turned on us. They had stagflation, which was double-digit inflation and unemployment, which we haven't even had since. That's when the national spirit, I think, was crushed. Reagan gave a temporary hope, and in the long run, he increased the debt. He gave amnesty to illegals. Nothing really. And it just paved the way for the 90s. Again, love to be wrong about any of this. None of this is really, you know, Christmas cheer inspiring stuff. But
no, but that's okay. I mean, it's fine. I don't mind that. It's fine to have, you know, one stream. I wouldn't want every stream to be like this, but it's fine for one stream to be a frank discussion of the decline of a country, because America does, you know, from afar, it does seem like, well, it is a country, an empire, a thing in decline.
I'll give an example of how completely broken this country is. I do freelance, so I wound up doing my 2020 taxes late. I wound up owing like $7,800. I contacted the IRS online to pay it 6 times in a row. It's like an error. Usually they let me pay it online. They wouldn't. So it's like, all right, I trot it down to the post office, stand behind 25 coughing black people, get up to Frederick Douglass at the counter. I've got my certified mail made out. This was, it was due on December 13th, December 6th. I'm thinking, okay, it's to Cincinnati. It's only 485 miles. No way this won't get there in time. The black guy behind the counter, suddenly he X's out the zip code. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, my database says that this is an invalid address. I'm like, hold on a second. I open up the envelope. I'm like, so the IRS has the wrong address? He's like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm like, I think I'm going to stick with the IRS. I put it back. He's like, okay, should get there by Monday, which is like a week. When I was a kid, you could put a 7-cent stamp and get it from Philadelphia to LA overnight. No question. It's now 9 days later. It's still not there. This is the way everything is working now. How much of it is the pandemic? I think a lot. How much of it is just, I think the country's given up. I think, you know, I'm of the, I think the pandemic, and I have no opinion on how valid this virus is, but I think the government's definitely using it to consolidate power and crush the economy and create chaos so they can come in and save everybody.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. My only quibble with that would be whether it's the government or powers above the government, like globalist powers, rather than...
That's basically the government at this point. Yeah.
Of course. It's just, is it the national government that's being this nefarious, or are they just following orders? I think that in the case of Britain, you know, I think I've said this, I must have said this, that it just seems like Boris Johnson... And all of these others, Boris Johnson's the Prime Minister, he just seems completely incompetent and not even, he doesn't even seem as appropriate for the role. He doesn't even seem competent in the role. He even comes across as an idiot, a buffoon. And then all the people around him, just placemen, identikit, droids. And obviously that's Britain. And so I think that, you know, when they implement some kind of radical program like shutting down the economy, putting everyone in lockdown, it's probably not them who's come up with that decision.
I've suspected for a few decades the real government is the Federal Reserve. They call the shots, and they're not part of the government. It's people who print the money. It's been that way for a long time.
Yeah.
And you can go into anarchist and libertarian literature from way back, and they were saying the same thing in the 1800s. A great one is No Treason by Lysander Spooner. He was talking in the 1860s about the bankers just, they play either side of a war. They shed millions of innocent bodies just to increase profits. It's kind of sad. You go from Andrew Jackson and Theodore Roosevelt, guys who could just knock your head off with one shot, and then you have a president who's anally incontinent. It doesn't inspire much hope.
Yeah, well, Biden is an interesting thing just because he seems like a husk. He seems like I don't know if it is dementia. If it's dementia, I've got to say it's advancing very slowly. So I suspect, because he's basically the same now as he was 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So I don't think that it is dementia, but I do think that he's, you know, he's old and
he may just have a chip in him at this point, who knows.
He does seem mentally in not competent.
Your sound went way down.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
muted. Yeah, he does seem mentally incompetent. And it's amazing to watch that playing out, this president. And some people, presumably, in America, you can tell me, some people presumably still have faith in him. There must be Democrat voters who look at him and think, yeah, this is fine. What would you say about that?
Yeah, there were Republican voters who, after 4 years, still had faith in Trump. So I don't understand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, in that case, I can understand that because he was still, I mean, he didn't seem.
No, he didn't seem like he was shitting his diapers. But
yeah,
he was,
exactly.
I asked people, like, what did he accomplish that he promised? And everything that I thought would get better got worse. The debt went way up. Media censorship, and he didn't seem interested in doing anything about it. I don't know if he was trying to play the long game with the riots, just letting people riot, thinking that would get him elected, but it didn't work. Like, nothing really. And he was, you know, Jared Kushner was probably pretty much the president. So I'm pessimistic about all that just due to my voting experience. And again, like with just about everything I say, I would be tickled pink. It would be the best Christmas present to be wrong about all this.
Well, what about the possibility that he actually did win the election and, you know, there was massive fraud to prevent him from getting into office?
I was so apathetic at that point, I didn't check into it. But, you know, what's depressing is we live in a world now where 4 years ago they were sure it was stolen. This time the other side was sure. And people believe what they want to believe based on their cluster of beliefs. And, you know, just like with the vaccine, there are very few epidemiologists out there. I trust that the government and the media is lying to us, but the problem is you can't really figure out exactly what they're lying to you about. And would it matter either way? What would be different if he were president? I'm not really sure. I think they would just ramp up the rioting.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not saying if only he were president, things would be a lot better now. They'd probably be exactly the same as they are. I mean, Charlottesville happened under him. Big tech censorship happened under him. COVID happened under him, started under him. Even the vaccine started under him. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, some people think some people say that everything has got worse this year with Biden in office and Kamala Harris and all this. I don't know.
But who knows if that's a result of them or just the process of a nation dying rapidly. You know, it could go. It was Hemingway who said that bankruptcy happens gradually, then all of a sudden. We're really well into all of a sudden now.
So, I mean, what would you envisage for the future of America? Do you think it's going to break up?
I would hope so. I mean, it's too big. You know, they talk about too big to fail. I think it's too big to work. But how is that achieved? And then you get accused of, you know, fomenting terrorism because there's really no people aren't just going to shake hands and. And, well, you know, we get Georgia and you get, like, that's not the way it works. So, I mean, happen peacefully.
No, and we should just be, you know, specific and clear about this and say that you're not advocating violence or anything. You're just predicting and speculating.
I'm noticing that violence is usually the way things get accomplished. Is that terroristic? you know, the government's, what was it, Max Weber, the sociologist, said that, you know, government by nature monopolizes violence. Yeah. It's not murder when they do it. It's not theft when they tax you. I just think that's realistic. Advocating, you don't have to advocate it. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's different than, you know, 1776 because of all the surveillance they have, and they've got nukes. They've got, you know, sonic technology that'll disable you and make you shit yourself. It seems a lot more hopeless. So, I mean, if it's that depressing, then maybe, you know, think about something else. I mean, I think I'm being realistic. If anyone has any actual solutions that make sense, I'd love to hear them. Bitching each other online, though, I don't think is going to be the way out.
Well, indeed. You know, all the stuff that I don't know how involved you are with Twitter. I'm not on Twitter anymore, so
I'm on there, but I just post my new articles. I posted that I was going to be on here, but that's about it.
But and I haven't been on for a year and a half at this point, and I have to say it's really good to be off Twitter. It really
social media, you, especially when you're antisocial.
I mean, well, what I was going to say was. It does seem that a lot of the debates that we've been having on social media for the last 10 years or so, ultimately it is, you know, Molyneux, Stefan Molyneux famously said, about, I don't know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, the time for arguments is over. And I think that, you know, that is kind of true at this point. It feels very much like there's just no point having these debates anymore. You know, we cannot negotiate with Antifa or the SJWs.
Right. You know, the people, you know, it's something a few years ago that a debate only makes sense if you have the same goal. And you can just argue about how to achieve that goal if you have completely different goals than your enemies. It took me, my retarded brain, like decades to realize most people don't go into a debate wanting to learn the truth or they want to show, like, insult the other guy. And I've met as much of an arrogant asshole as I am. If you came with a point that said, no, you're wrong about the future, because I'd say, oh, didn't look at it that way. Because it's as dumb as you look being wrong, you look 10 times as dumb doubling down. But that's what almost everyone who goes into a debate does. It's like your mother's ugly. Like they'll just go in.
Debating is that this is the sort of absurdity of debating. It's really about, it's a dick measuring contest. It's a bitching contest. It's who can be more bitchy about the other.
People are so dumb. And I mean, I think, you know, it's been proven that living online has shortened people's attention spans. It's like Idiocracy, where you get the best insult and you have the most attitude and you yell the loudest. People really think you won the debate. They don't even understand what a debate is. I mean, for example, that one between Jared Taylor and E. Michael Jones, who's the crankiest guy who ever lived. And he just started yelling at Taylor about Jews. And it's like, okay, maybe he doesn't mention Jews, but that's not what you're debating about. You're debating whether race is real, and you already lost the debate. You didn't even address it.
Yeah.
But, you know, these ones who want to mention Jews all the time, which is fine. It's, you know, I'm all about mentioning taboos, and you hear about Hollywood's too white and, you know, the culture's too white. It's like, come on. But he lost that debate in dramatic fashion because he didn't even know what the debate was about.
He seemed to be not quite sure what he was there to do. It was strange. It was strange when he segued onto that issue. When it's that was completely outside the bounds.
Have a separate debate about that, sure.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. That was strange.
I think Jared Taylor's brilliant, but you know what he gets stuck on is he says the Jews look white to me. Mm. He doesn't look Jewish to them. That's the only thing I'd add to that.
Well, yeah, this was that's a sort of analog of a phrase I heard the other day that a message to young white liberals. It doesn't matter whether you hate BLM or whatever, they hate you. And it doesn't matter that you've got love in your heart for them, they hate you. That's all that matters.
That's kind of why I've had a problem with an exaggerated, malignant, swollen problem with the whole traditionalist race denial stuff. Well, you shouldn't categorize, it's a category of the mind. It's like, really? You can prove it in a DNA test, number one. But, you know, and I keep bringing this. I debated the always cheerful EMJ a few years ago. What we have in common is we're both from Philly, so we're both kind of crass. But he said that a friend of his, an Irish Catholic friend of his, got shot to death in North Philly. North Philly is a blown out war zone. It's around where I went to college. Temple University is in North Philly. But I said, well, I'm sure he wasn't shot for being Irish or Catholic. You know, if they're going to shoot you for being white, maybe you should realize that's the war that you're in.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. It's a similar thing in the European theater with people who still cleave to old things like, you know, England, English and Scottish. And meantime, we're being flooded with people from the third world.
Right.
They look at you and they don't know whether you're English or Scottish and they don't care. It would mean nothing.
Right.
To them. So it's an absurd thing.
It's a matter of proximity. I mean, yes. I mean, when there were nothing but white settlers and Indians, it's funny. Like when I was born, the only races you saw on TV were cowboys and Indians. Everyone was, you didn't see black people until like the late 60s. Bill Cosby, the Quaalude rapist, finally got the first starring role in a TV show called I Spy with Robert Culp. He was like the black buddy. It was the first black and white cop buddy show. But yeah, I mean, of course, it's going to be meaningful if all you know is Belfast and it's Catholics and Protestants.
Yeah, and it's real thing. And I mean, I don't want to diminish it. You know, in that context, it's a very real.
Absolutely.
Conflict.
I mean, I said a long time ago, if you only had identical twins left, on the planet, they find a way to play Crips and Bloods. People thrive on conflict. But, you know, like EMJ's friend was not shot for being Catholic or Irish. They saw a white boy.
Of course. Of course. It is a strange thing, but I think, and even now, you know, even now in 2021, I still see this among Scots, that they still love to hate the English. I think it's almost a sort of comforting thing for them to think about and invest in, because it means, that means that they don't have to be racist. They can just be anti-English. But also it means that they don't really have to think about the modern world. It's like they can comfortably fight last century's battle or 3 centuries ago.
Sure, there are ancient ancestral grievances. I mean, just like here in the U.S., the North and South, that was by far our bloodiest war. Every third household in the South lost a family member. But then when you've got feral ex-Africans burning down Atlanta, maybe Yankees aren't the problem anymore. You know, it's don't live in the past.
Yeah. America, it does seem to me that the only way it will have a future is by secession, balkanization. And I guess I might bring this up with Greg during his stream, because somebody asked that question earlier about how that could play out. Do you have any thoughts about that? About how
it's so much more complicated than the last Civil War, because there was a dividing line, the Mason-Dixon line. It was North and South, and they had blue uniforms and gray uniforms. And now it's going to be block to block, because it's probably going to be an ethnic war. It's not going to be red and blue states or any of that stuff. And also urban versus rural. But you've got urban all across the country and you've got rural. It's incredibly messy and complicated. I wish it was less complicated, but it's not.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that's going to trigger it is a financial collapse. Everyone can have their little pet projects and their little Facebook political groups until they can't get bread. That's when it gets serious.
Absolutely. And this is something I've said for years, that it's as long as there's comfort and luxury.
Yeah.
And we do live in compared to any other period in history, even the poorest person today lives in luxury.
Are you familiar with Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
Yeah, of course.
Right. And I'm sure he was, you know, but he was a psychiatrist, but the bottom part of the pyramid was just shelter and food, you know, and then you finally get up to self-actualization and transcendence or whatever.
Fiber optic Wi-Fi. And so
once you remove the shelter and food, no one cares about, you know, optics or ideology. It's pretty much life or death.
Yeah, exactly. So there was I forgot where I was actually going with that, but about the hierarchy. Yeah. As long as people are comfortable, they can always just not care about anything else. Mm-hmm. So I've always said this, that if there is going to be a collapse of society, it's going to follow a huge economic collapse. Would you see that in the near future for America?
It seems, what was it last year? 35% of the dollars in existence were printed. That's not a good sign. But I think they found, you know, bread and circuses, they found ways to placate people. They talk about food riots. Wait until they have pill riots. Wait until people can't get their antidepressants and their anti-anxiety medicine and their opiates and their painkillers. People are going to go nuts. I think they've done to Americans. I'm not sure what the I heard once in England that there are traces of Prozac in the drinking water that they can't even filter out because so many people are on antidepressants. But I mean, Kaczynski had the greatest point about antidepressants. Like, imagine a society that's so sadness inducing that people have to take a pill to feel better. And, you know, I don't believe in chemical depression. I believe people get sad when they have a sad life. You fix the situation that's making you sad. But when that's impossible, people have pills and it's like, oh, there are cockroaches crawling over my face, but their little toes feel nice. And
yeah. And I have a fairly nuanced position on antidepressants because they did work for me.
Really?
At one time in my life, 2008, but it was only as a temporary measure. And I only ever thought of them that this is going to be a temporary measure. Now I've discovered antidepressants. I don't need to do anything about my life. That would be a fucking retarded thing to think.
I've known so many people who just fell into that ditch and never got out.
No,
really close to me.
I was always thinking, so when am I going to get off them? And I think I was only on the full dose for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, and then immediately started to slowly. And that's the other mistake that people make, is that they think, I'll just stop taking them.
Yeah, that can give you seizures and all kinds
of problems. It's mad. I don't know how someone could make such an obvious mistake, because obviously your brain is going to miss the sudden, like it's acclimatized to this presence of this drug. If it's suddenly not there, your brain is going to, you know, overreact.
They scared the hell out of me. I mean, at a very low point in my life, facing 25 years in prison, my mom was diagnosed with cancer, my first wife relapsed with cancer. I had retained money to get a lawyer that all the convicts said never loses, but he couldn't take my case because people he had already retained had drug charges. I went down to the jail commissary and said, give me something. They put me on Paxil.
And right. I haven't heard of that.
I only drank for 3 years of my life. I quit when I was 20. The only other drug I've had a habit with was weed. I gave that up about 6 months ago. But I've tried every other drug there is, including acid and ketamine. The only thing that caused me to have auditory hallucinations was Paxil, the antidepressant. I would wake up in my cell in the middle of the night to the sound of screams. And this happened like 3 or 4 times. It's like, oh, those are in your head.
This is the other thing about antidepressants. It's a lottery about what side effects they're going to have on you. And sometimes it makes the damn situation even worse, which is obviously terrible. I was lucky. Again, I was really lucky with this because didn't really have any side effects.
The chilling thing about people I've known that are on them is their life never gets better. They still say they feel depressed, but they always say, I need it. I think only chemical compound in there that works is this thing that deludes them into thinking they need it. It's terrifying to me. To me, like, social media is one thing. Mass dosing of people with antidepressants and the Sacklers with opioids is another. And, you know, eventually automation. Those are the three pony riders of the apocalypse for me.
Yeah, it is a horrible situation. The antidepressants, I think, as I said, it should only ever be a short-term thing. But, of course, that means taking control of your life, and a lot of people just don't want to do that. It's easier just to keep taking
that. You like to be optimistic. I mean, I like to think of myself as a fighter, but the truth is, with automation, with immigration, with societal chaos, there's not a lot of real reasons to feel hopeful. If you can find meaning and grab it by the horns and ride it like a bull, great. But I think that's more difficult than it was a generation or two, definitely 3 or 4 ago.
And this won't surprise you. I'm sure this won't surprise you to hear this, but you come across as quite burnt out, quite grizzled by life.
Well, hell, I mean, prison, brain surgery, cancer, public crucifixion. Sure. But I mean, I don't think it's dampened my sense of humor or my fighting spirit.
Not at all. But what I was going to ask was, were you always like this? Or was there a time when you were romantic about, for example, America?
Never about America, but like, I mean, you can go to facebook.com/Jim Goad and look at the wife I got. Oh my God. And, you know, my animals and my son, I'm like disgusting. I'm extremely romantic about some things, but like, you wouldn't know about it just to hear what I write about, because I made the stupid decision to write about things that upset me.
Right. Well, that's understandable. You know, with my own work, my own channel, I was talking about things that are wrong in the world, and it did become so much that people started asking, well, what do you like? There must be things that that are up, you know, and the thing is, there are. It's just that it's often not as interesting to talk about those, because, you know, there's a certain type of person, and I'm of this type, who are very good at finding problems and analyzing problems endlessly, but not so good at finding solutions. It's just not the way your mind works.
That's what I said at the end of my Redneck Manifesto book. It's like, oh, I thought just diagnosing the problem. You want a solution? No, that's not my deal. But as far as like people don't understand, and I think it was Nick Gielvey who writes for Countercurrents. He tagged me as neurodivergent, you know, possibly autistic, sociopathic, definitely epileptic. I've definitely got different neurology. I don't find any romanticism in country, nation, my group. It's just, it's not the way I am. It's not me copping an attitude or being difficult. I just, it's a blank space for me. It's much more personal things, things that have personal meaning for me.
So you are romantic. You've been romantic about people, presumably.
People really close to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, and pets. I mean, but no one wants to hear me write about my cat.
You tell me. I want to hear you talk about your cat. Yeah,
no one wants to pay me to write about my cat. Let's put it that way.
Well, I love cats. And dogs as well. Yes, this is one of those things that I couldn't choose. You know, sometimes this poll comes out, like cats or dogs, and I can't do it.
Oh yeah, I've got a Boston Terrier Boxer mix who's ridiculously adorable. Yeah, but you'd throw up just to see me interacting with it. Those are the things that it's hard to explain to somebody who's socially wired that I'm just not that way. Like I said, they think you're being difficult. I understand they're that way. Wouldn't try to, well, be, you know, and I heard Ed Dutton, who's brilliant, oh, individualism, the curse of it. It's like, that's just the way, you know, I would give Ed a scalpel and knife, dissect my brain. You won't find the social wiring in there. I think it's utterly sincere. It's not a pose. It's just, but people who are socially wired don't seem capable of realizing there are people who are not.
So are you describing sociopathy?
If it's, you know, if you mean like intending to inflict harm on society, no. I think societies are inherently corrupt and dishonest. I think I can handle individuals much better. People in groups act cruelly and stupidly and more barbaric than individuals do. I mean, when you see how people act in groups, I don't think... I mean, if you just say sociopathy or sociopath is someone who just doesn't like social groups, yeah, I take that as a badge of honor rather than an insult.
No, I mean, the word sociopathy, I would associate that with something far more, destructive.
Malignant, yeah.
Yeah, malignant, exactly.
Yeah, it's just, I don't really get much pleasure. I mean, I know there are people who just, you know, they love being in a crowd and feeling that there are people who are with them and agree with them. It's like, a turn off kind of. As long as I got one person who understands me, I'm cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are some questions that have come in.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Yeah. So I might as well. I don't know if I've posted the link, but I'll do that just now, just in case people aren't aware where they can send questions. And I also did. I should have mentioned this before. I fixed the Bitcoin Lightning address. I'd put up the wrong fucking QR code, so if people had tried to use that, it wouldn't have worked. And you can also use that to send super chats. So there's Entropy and Cointree. No one ever uses Cointree, but that's a bit of a shame. So if you hold on a second, Jim, I'll get to that. Okay, here's there we go. Gadius has put it up. Thank you. And the Cointree link as well is there. Hold on a second, I'll get that. There we go. Okay, so here we go. All right, Jim, and this is from SF. I think you know this guy. I live in a city where the homeless population is free to do as they wish, short of murder. They get free cell phones, food, and bus fare. They even get free needles from county health services. How do you explain to the people in my city that no one is looking at us and thinking they really care about the homeless?
If I understand this question correctly, I mean, that seems to be a facet of communism, socialism throughout the world, as they step on everyone in the middle to unite the elites and the completely downtrodden. I remember seeing James Cameron, and I've never seen any movies ever made. I've seen fewer movies than any American adult alive. But this guy's made like billions of dollars worth of movies, but he's there posing with some, you know, the Jujube Indians of the Amazon, like, and he's wearing their ceremonial garb and everything. But if somebody in Riverside, California, you know, gets hit by a truck while he's filming, he doesn't care. I mean, that's why where populism comes in. It's like, well, we need some kind of ruthless leader to take care of everybody in the middle, you know, not the billionaires and the fuck ups. That's who we're catering to now. You know, if someone can find a way to reinstate the middle, because I know what happened with the kulaks in the Soviet Union, just, you know, the middle class. The aim is to wipe it out. And that appears to be what's happening again by design. That was an appeal of Trump. Keep the jobs, you know, in the country. When I went to see him speak, in Atlanta. It was great in early 2016. And you write an article, you know, you have a subject, you don't know what the theme is. It was a cold, rainy day and Sunday. Before I go to sleep, I have to write the article. It's okay. What's the hype on Trump? He's racist. Okay, what did he talk about? He didn't mention race once. He actually had a bunch of token blacks open up for him. He had Diamond and Silk and all these people. But he talked about, you know, Carrier air conditioner going to Mexico and this other job, you know, going to China. And at least for the time being, he seemed like he cared about the excluded middle, everybody who got lost in the middle. Again, I don't know if it's because a president doesn't do much or can't do much, or he forgot about that, or he listened to his advisors, but that seemed to evaporate the minute he got elected. But I mean, it sounds like the guy lives in Portland. I do a show on Gavin's network. I have a guy, former weed dealer of mine, who works with the homeless now in Portland. It's just horrifying. They legalized all drugs. They've got crocodile in Portland now. You know that?
Oh, yeah, fucking gross.
People shitting and shooting up on the streets. When I got to Portland in 94, it was to escape L.A., where there were homeless, you know, the riots, the earthquakes. Portland was like a little alpine city. It was a joke of a city. You could walk, you know, through any part of Portland in the middle of the night. Now you need a gun, like, downtown, and you're likely to get carjacked or have someone with an HIV-positive needle harass you, you know, for panhandling money downtown. It's insane what happened to that. But, I mean, I've always been pro-rural. There's enough of Travis Bickle in me that it's not good to put me in a big city because I'm PTSD and will probably go off just being around that many rude people. Sure, yeah. I mean, you get out in the country and you get a lot of dumb people, but I can handle, you know, one dumb person every 10 miles instead of like 400 junkies every square foot.
Well, I was in Portland in 2016, and I think it's probably got a lot worse since then. That's 5 years
ago. Yeah, which is unimaginable. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty bad then, to be honest. I remember not liking it much. I did like it, but I didn't feel comfortable, partly because it was so lefty, and I was at that time a fairly high-profile alt-right figure, and I actually got recognized on the street in Portland. It was the first time I ever got recognized in public. And it was in Portland, but it was by a fan, so it was okay.
I tell the same story so many times, but since it's apropos of Portland, you can look up skinheads against white people. That's somewhere online. It was in Vice magazine when Gavin worked there. After I got out of the joint, I was stalked by the second largest gang in all of Oregon. They were called the Rose City Bobber Boys. They were anti-racist skinheads. And I had three physical altercations with them on the streets of Portland. They didn't want to debate, though. Maybe they were ahead of the curve. they decided what I was and decided that they could beat tolerance into me, which doesn't work that way with me. But they had carte blanche from City Hall. I mean, the leader of that gang, I think they broke up. It was, interestingly enough, a New York sharp gang came up and just beat them out of existence. But their leader claimed to be Jewish, but his cohort murdered some Nazi skinhead singer of some punk band, and he turned state's evidence against him, and he was an informant. And these anti-racist skinheads worked with City Hall and the police department just to, they had carte blanche to beat up anyone they decided was a Nazi. And it was a scandal and went on for years. I mean, there was some other, you'd probably call him a wignat Nazi skinhead, who got out of prison, threatened their leader, back in prison for intimidation. Like, they worked hand in hand. And this was before, like, even the word Antifa was used. This was I guess they used it in Germany in the early 30s. But only thing I heard back then, besides these anti-racist skinheads, this was like 20 years ago, were ARA, anti-racist action. But that's you figured there was a cluster of extreme nut jobs, but that's the whole city now.
Exactly. It seems like people are like the hipsters, and there were loads of hipsters there in 2016. And I've heard that a lot of them have moved out because it's just not, you know, it's not middle class enough anymore for them. It's not comfortable enough.
Oh, God. We bought a house for $65,000 in 1996. I checked. It's like $400,000 now. That's It used to be incredibly livable, but they've made it just a hell, a living hell.
Mm. Now, that was where I discovered Whole Foods in Portland. I really enjoyed Whole Foods. But yeah, that was a nice thing that came out of it. But yeah, it obviously was. And actually, it was Portland was where I first saw the sight of hipsters, like hipster couples with children, with small, like in a, I don't know what you call them in America, a pram, a buggy.
Yeah.
So they were like, they've got a young baby carriage. Yeah. Right. And that was an interesting phenomenon because up till then, hipsters had been, you know, in their 20s. And early 20s, you know, and now okay, they're reaching that stage in life.
Yeah. Did the baby have a mohawk?
I can't remember. but yeah, I forgot what I was going to say about Portland. But yeah, okay. So someone asks, did I read somewhere that there is a correlation between epilepsy and musical ability?
I don't know about musical ability, but Julius Caesar or Julius Caesar was epileptic. just like left-handers, I'm also a left-hander. They tend to cluster like genius or retarded.
I'm still deciding.
Right. Well, it depends on we're talking about analytical skills or, you know, wisdom. But the creepiest thing, Dostoevsky was epileptic, and The Idiot was kind of autobiographical. But when I read Notes from Underground, it was like every sentence I read, it's like, holy shit, I wrote this. I thought exactly like the character in Notes from Underground. So I do think it gives you a different neurological wiring, a different way of looking at the world, which can be valuable. I mean, freaks can, like, Ed Dutton talks about the spiteful mutants, but it's usually been mutants that have invented things.
Yeah. Exactly. There is obviously a need for the outsider.
I look at it as a bee colony. Like, they all play different roles. You need the worker drones to dig the ditches and, you know, behave and everything. But they all serve a purpose.
Okay, Phil says, Merry Christmas to Woz and Jim Goad. Thank you very much. And Gadius Maximus asks, what was the best week this year?
Best week this year, as far as news or personally, or God, I'm not sure. I mean,
you can answer either or both.
Because for Counter Currents, I write the worst week yet, and they just get worse every week. I think when Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted, that was good. But that was, I mean, was it a day or two later, the guy in Waukesha, Wisconsin, ran over and killed 6 white people and like injured 4 dozen others. As far as like positive news, yeah, that's the only thing that comes to mind right now is Kyle Rittenhouse getting acquitted.
Yeah, that was a good moment.
And that didn't even last a week.
Didn't last at all. Jim, now that you're writing fiction, I have an idea for a plot. A world where white people socialize with other whites the way that they currently socialize with blacks, while blacks are held to the same expectations and behavioral standards that whites are held to.
Now you're talking about the 1950s. Because that's when blacks were called Negroes, and they were, I loved when they were Negroes. They were obedient, they wore glasses, they were nerdy, they were maids and butlers and compliant. That's why I love what, I mean, I lose myself in movies from the 1940s because every once in a while you see a black guy and it's like, yes, sir, your train's coming on time. So where's it coming? It's like, I mean, that's what it sounds like. White people get along with whites and blacks are forced to get along with whites or live by white rules. Yeah. That's the 1940s, 1950s.
It's important to say it did seem to work out well for them. I mean, a black middle class and all that.
How can you look at any of these movies? The wife and I have been watching a lot of noir films from the 40s, and like the cars are the size of whales. Even the poorest sharecropper has a 3-piece suit and a top hat, and everyone's dressed to the nines. You can just tell society, civilization was working on a much higher level then. Everyone's just, and here I am in a t-shirt and sweatpants with a baseball cap on talking about all this. But everything, I mean, as far as standards and culture, everything fell apart. It's funny because, like, in a lot of ways, I'm anti-traditionalist, but I'm not the one who can tell you the name of any Marvel movie or, like, the latest E-trend in the dissident right or any of those things. It's like, Yeah, I don't think St. Thomas Aquinas used Twitter either, guys. Like, it's these electrical traditionalists are kind of amusing to me.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. Someone says, and this is, yeah, okay, he says, God bless your son, Jim. I have a little boy, too. I think that was when you mentioned your son's medical trouble. Mm-hmm. And someone else says, Atlanta, the city too gay to hate.
It became like the gay Mecca, like it overtook San Francisco. But it's like it's midtown. It's this little cluster of gays surrounded by this, you know, this chocolate donut. It's like when I first landed here in 2007, it's like, what did I land in Nigeria? It's like they're everywhere. And I'm from Philly. There's a ton there, but like nothing like Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 5 years ago, I visited Philadelphia, and it was full of very black city.
And angry ones. I mean, everyone's much mellower down here. Everyone in Philly is a jerk.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And the underground, the subway, it seemed quite.
Oh God. Yeah.
Quite dangerous. I had the feeling. Okay. What EMJ doesn't realize is that just because he doesn't care about race, race still cares about him. This is a sort of debating tool that people came up with.
He kept saying that it was a category of the mind.
As if that, yeah, and it, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, if just because you repeat, that's like saying race is a social construct. But he says that there are three ethnic groups in America: Catholics, Protestants, and Jews.
Yeah,
he's got some serious categorization. You know, if he rails on fags and Jews and people like that, fine. There's a market for that, but my whole, you know, it's not a theory, because a theory is something that's proven. Hypothesis is that there's seen this sudden abrupt switch to anti-racial thinking and pro-religious traditional thinking around the time of Charlottesville, around the time of 2016, the alt-right, alt-light split. I would love to have some philanthropist give me the money to do a year researching who was behind that. I don't think that was a sudden eruption of faith. I think that was engineered. Maybe someone in the Republican Party got scared at where it was going. It was bad optics, as they say. But, you know, I realize that the culture is, you know, what was the Santa Inc. thing that Sarah Silverman and Seth Rogen came? It's not exactly friendly to Christians, but they're way behind. You can say, I'm a Christian. No one's going to fire you, beat you up in the street. You say, well, I'm white and I don't see the problem. You're going to be destroyed. So it's like, you got to realize what battlefield you're playing on, whether you choose to be white or not. It's like, you learn that in the joint too. It's like, yeah, well, you're white, whether you like it or not. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to say about EMJ. I mean, I had him on Millennial last year, and I did put up some resistance to what he was saying. Some people said that I was too nice. Some people said that I did well. I mean, I wasn't sure if there was any. At some point in the debate, I just realized there's no point, because he's on a completely different planet. He just doesn't see or just doesn't care about the things that I care about. And I'm not religious. I'm not Catholic. And so I can't care about that in the way that he does either. So there was just no sort of meeting ground. And he's so
cantankerous.
Well, cantankerous and forceful about this point that race just is a category of the mind. He kept saying that, and it's like, well, what does that mean, though? I mean, it clearly is a real thing.
How did
thing.
I just and find I got, my first cousin on 23andMe, if that's true?
Yeah, exactly. And this is the kind of thing I said to him. I tried to get this nailed down. That does he recognize race as a real thing? And he does. He just thinks that it's not relevant to identity. But I don't see how that can possibly be.
Yeah,
I don't see how you can possibly say that.
Blood's thicker than water. I mean, I'll always be white, but I'm no longer Catholic. So I think that settles the, you know, and no one, no. If I walk through North Philly like his friend who got murdered, no one would see a former Catholic or an Irish guy. I mean, and that's what he said on that that debate with Jared Taylor, that I'm from Philly and it was never white against black. It was German versus Irish. It's like, OK, he's like 15 years older than me, maybe in his neighborhood. But hell, I drove a cab through Philly. It was, you know, black and white. And that was it. And Puerto Rican. Those were the worst neighborhoods. Those were actually, they're called the Philadelphia Badlands. That's kind of a buffer zone between all black North Philly, and then really hardcore, like the, where Rocky was filmed, working class Kensington, like a really nasty old, like going back a couple of centuries, Irish neighborhood.
Right. Okay.
But now you look at Streets of Kensington on YouTube. It's nothing but junkies falling asleep. Interracial junkies falling asleep on the pavement. They brought diversity to Kensington.
Somebody said, Bane of Crenshaw said, you can't eat Bitcoin and it won't keep you warm. I don't know what that was in relation to, because we haven't talked about crypto at all.
It might be the blabbermouth from the last stream, but okay.
Okay. All right. And okay, I've read old that's an unpronounceable name. I've read old SPLC articles quoting EMJ libeling SSPX. I've forgotten about that. Pius the X priests as Jew haters and Hitler worshippers. Now he is implying that Jared Taylor is a subversive for not going hard enough on the Jews and dropping case slurs on people's streams. Remember, he did it on the last millennial too. Very straight, yes, and he did. And that was, to be fair, I didn't say to him beforehand, don't use any racial slurs or ethnic slurs, to be fair to him. But still, you'd like if that was common sense.
Again, not every, some of these purity spiralers, you're just going to have to dig up Hitler's corpse, and that's the only person who's ideologically correct. People look at it like a bee colony. Some people are gatekeepers. All you have to do is flip someone from the dominant narrative and leave the rest up to them, whether they realize or acknowledge the destructive or the anti-white element of Jewish power. I mean, you don't necessarily have to, or it's just stages. With these people, and it's hilarious. Well, you don't go hard enough on the Jews. I'm like, okay, Publius 3000, brave guy. What's your name again? it's so weird to put your name and your face and your ideas out there and get accused of ideological cowardice by someone who doesn't even have the balls to reveal their own name.
Yeah.
It's a weird situation to be in.
Yeah, it's also that there are people who want it to be the topic all the time, and whatever else you're discussing, they ask you, why are you not discussing?
You can have a Jew room, make a little Jew room and talk about Jews. That's fine too. But it's that kind of purity spiraling scolding that the left does and any fanatic does. You got to realize it's a little more complicated than that. And another thing, I'm not sure if the guy even mentioned it, but one thing that I think is poisonous is who's funding this guy and is this guy a Fed? That I think the Feds are creating the everyone's a Fed meme. That's behind the Feds.
I remembered last night about it just came out. I don't know, it just popped into my head from nowhere that when I got doxxed in 2017, there was a guy, a Scottish guy, who did a video claiming that I was a Fed. And his evidence for this was that I spoke properly. I speak good English. I speak grammatically. And that was it. His other evidence was that there was I didn't have any history in nationalism in Scotland. So therefore, I must be a Fed.
Does this guy even reveal his name? Or
I don't think so. But I mean, it was just such a I remember at the time I couldn't believe how stupid this was.
It's like calling someone a racist at this point. You don't need any proof. You've stained them. You look brave, but you've really not proven anything. And if you deny being a Fed, then you're a Fed in denial. I think the Feds, if the Feds aren't orchestrating this, getting everyone to call everyone else a Fed thing, they're definitely enjoying it because it creates complete distrust, paranoia. Feds thrive on that sort of thing.
It's very damaging. Clearly.
I mean, if your concern is, because I know that was the thing with the optics war, you don't want young men to ruin their lives. Young men ruin their lives on January 6th just as much as they did in Charlottesville. It's don't be too obvious or realize what you're worth, what's worthy of risking and what's not. But if someone's a little braver than you, at least give them credit for that. Don't accuse them of being a federal agent. Like I said, Publius 3000 and all these keyboard warriors.
Hmm. Okay. What made you give up the wacky tobacco?
It accelerates your heartbeat 30 beats per minute. And I was smoking a joint driving my truck and got dizzy and decided that maybe that's not the best thing to do. Plus, it's one of those things. I mean, when I drank, I got violent. The last time I drank, I got into a fight with two cops that I don't remember. Never behaved wrong, but I realize you're an addict when $40 of weed doesn't seem nearly as expensive as a $40 meal. Or a $40 electric bill. It's just, it's not good for your lungs, you know. And it was a way of running from, it was like an antidepressant. It's like, well, fix what you're anxious about and you won't even need the weed. That was pretty much it. But, I mean, if you can handle it, I mean, there are people that can handle alcohol. I'm just way too Irish. And I think you know, addictive personality is probably neurological too. I just grew up hating alcohol because of the way my dad acted on it. And it's weird. So many, you know, it's the white intoxicant and European. It's like, fine. But, you know, that's how the Indians were conquered. That's how the Irish were bowled over. I mean, it's really destructive, too. And it ends your life quicker. 40% of violent crime is tied to alcohol. Every 2 years, an equivalent amount of Americans are killed as soldiers died in the Vietnam War. Just because of irresponsible drunk drivers. Generally, life gets hard. And if you've got unending physical pain, I could see getting on a painkiller. But otherwise, and I've avoided my problems for long stretches of my life, but it's better to face them because they don't get any better when you run from them. That's all. I don't want to be mothers against drunk driving, but I mean, I experimented and, you know, I know what they feel like. And that's about all I need to know.
Yeah. I mean, I never drank, but actually because of the epilepsy, this is a story that I used to have to tell everyone. Because people would ask you, well, why aren't you drinking? What, you don't drink? And so I'd have to explain. And eventually I just came up with a lie and just said I'm teetotal because it became so tedious to explain this. But basically what happened was when I was 14, I had the first fit and the doctor said to me, don't drink. Because around this age, you know, boys start to drink alcohol, start, you know, having fun and all this. So don't drink because that'll make you much more likely to have a seizure. And as a result of that, I never started to drink. And I never got the taste for it. So
I'm not sure how much of it had to do with epilepsy, but it definitely brought out the violent side of me. It's in my book, The Bomb Inside My Brain. I had the shit kicked out of me high on acid. And if that wasn't bad enough, I mean, after I had the brain surgery, it's like, okay, no hallucinogens. Because I can't imagine, like, having a seizure on acid. That would just be, that would be the ultimate bad trip, I would think.
Yeah, I would say so. Someone says, this is Bane of Crenshaw says, Jim says I have mood poisoning. Must be something I hate.
What poisoning?
Mood poisoning. It must be something I hate. I think it's a wordplay.
Wordplay, okay.
Jim is Hunter S. Thompson, but with race realism.
Could be. You know, I mean, I've read some of his books when I was in college, and I liked the way he used words, but I think he's highly overrated. You can look up Hell's Angel Confronts Hunter S. Thompson on YouTube. Have you ever seen that? What a different world it was. It's sometime in the 60s. It was after he wrote the book on the Hell's Angels. And you got this angel come out with his Harley. He's like, hey, you know, you said, I don't understand why you wrote this book. You promised us a case of beer and we never got our case of beer. And you see what a little pussy Hunter S. Thompson is like. And, you know, in the interview, you got the shit kicked out of you because you interrupted Junkie George was beating up his old lady. He's like, yeah, well, only a punk beats up his old lady. He's like, look, sometimes an old woman deserves it because she runs her mouth. And the whole audience breaks into hysterics. The world was so different back then.
And so, oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, so, because what feminism, like, if you want equal pay, I don't care. Like, if you can do the job, fine. But it became a folk religion where women are innocent and men are evil. That I have a problem with. But,
oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Women know how nasty women can be. Completely. Yes. But what I was saying about Thompson, I think the guy who was far superior was Tom Wolfe, and he was really, to my knowledge, the first guy who wrote about wokeness before there was even a name for it. He wrote Radical Chic, that party at Lenny's. It's from like 1969, 1970. He's at the penthouse apartment in Manhattan, Central Park, of Leonard Bernstein, the conductor of the New York Philharmonic. And they decided to be cool to invite the Black Panthers there. And he's describing these hors d'oeuvres in great detail, but he's like, these people don't realize that if they had the chance, these Black Panthers would slit their throats. And that was paired into a book. There was another story, Mau Mauing the Flak Catchers, which took place at San Francisco City Hall. And it was the emergence of these Al Sharpton types in the 60s. Whatever they wanted, they just flood City Hall with like 1,000 screaming Black kids. And just so you didn't look racist, they'd give them whatever, you know, public works project. He was the first guy who wrote about any of this stuff. But he was a Southern dandy. He was genteel and better at the language with Tom Wolfe than Hunter S. Thompson was. Hunter S. Thompson, too, was just because of experiences, my dad, my pilled out brother, don't have a lot of respect for addicts. I saw him on David Letterman once, and he was absolutely incoherent.
Yeah, there was one thing about Tom Wolfe. He wrote an essay called "The Great Relearning." Are you familiar with that? It was in the late '60s, or rather, he talks about the late '60s, and I can't remember when exactly he wrote it. But he says it's a fascinating concept. He was saying that in the late '60s, he was visiting some hippie commune. Can't remember where. And he said that they were rediscovering diseases that had been extinct for hundreds of years. Nobody had experienced them because everyone had washed their bed linen since then. People hadn't shared toothbrushes since then. People hadn't worn each other's underwear since then. But these hippies were doing all of these things. So they were these old diseases were appearing for the first time in centuries. And doctors didn't even have modern names for them. They didn't have Latin names for them.
There was a passage in the Electric Kool-Aid acid test where he went along with Ken Kesey and the Murray Pranksters as they did acid up and down in a van, a VW microbus up and down the West Coast. It was a passage that had always stood out to me because it was Jack Cassidy. It was one of the more macho hippies. He's there with his shirt off, all muscular, throwing an axe up and catching it, and all the women are just staring at him. And Tom noted, like, even though this acid was supposed to make everyone transcend these dualities of gender, like, the women still wanted the muscular guy throwing the axe up. That some of these things you couldn't erase with, you know, a million ounces.
Well, exactly. And this was the broader point that Tom Wolfe was making with that essay, that the hippies thought that they could escape all of the strictures of conventional life and all this.
Yeah.
But all they discovered was why those strictures were in place in the first place. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Underrated. I think Thompson, too, I'm not sure how sincere his because he was vicious toward Nixon. He might have just gotten fortunate. The timing was fortunate because people wanted to hear that, you know, back in that era, just savaging. And I mean, I grew up in that era where when the counterculture slowly became the culture, where just attacking these old drunk white guys was basically it was brave for a while. I mean, people don't realize how brave some of the hippies were because they would get their heads kicked in. You look at the Hard Hat Riot. You familiar with that?
No, never.
In Manhattan, like 70, 71, there were some revolutionary hippies who had some protests, and these construction workers. It was called the hippies versus the hard hats. That was the big cultural divide back then. Construction workers wore they just came in and they just cracked hippie heads up and down the block, you know, which in retrospect looks looks cool. But you had to actually risk something back then to be a hippie because it really did go against the grain. I mean, Easy Rider, I'm not sure if you've ever seen that, but that's you would get harassed out of every town, and you know the Louisiana cracker winds up blowing the guy away at the end of the movie. But now it's like the hippies are those people.
Yeah.
They're burn your house down for wrong think.
Well, yeah, I mean that you'd have to connect hippies with Antifa, which wouldn't be a very difficult thing to do. Hippies in the late '60s with Antifa today. And yeah, there absolutely is. It's probably the same people doing it. It's probably the same segment of society.
Grandchildren. Yeah, but it's much less risky now. I mean,
exactly. Well, yeah, but what I mean is it's these middle class, university educated who want to be rebellious. Yeah. And they want to piss off their parents.
They have wealth guilt. They have trauma envy. Yeah. All sorts of these psychological afflictions. It's like, trust me, trauma is not that great. You should be happy that you have a nice, comfortable life and live yeah. it, live it to the fullest.
Yeah, tell me. Yeah, exactly. That's part of it, isn't it? That people don't realize how precious that it actually is. Yeah, okay. Bain of Crenshaw says, it's not so, this is when we were talking about sociopathy. It's not sociopathy, it's social apathy. Okay, I get, obviously, clever wordplay, and I get the point, but sociopathy is a thing. I mean, you're not going to fucking tell me that some evil cunt who goes around hurting other people is, that's just some sort of mild, or, you know, he's just socially apathetic. No.
I wouldn't say I'm
evil cunt.
That's why when you said it, it's like, you know, do I wish to harm people because I don't like the way societies operate? Absolutely not. I'm obviously bothered by what's happened to this society because it's a much less friendly society for me, just being a white male. But I feel like I also have to be realistic about exactly what you can change. I'm not an organizer, not a community organizer. I think if I have any value, it's just pointing out what's wrong in a funny way. And if you can phrase it cleverly, that fills a niche.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's the sort of thing that persuaded me, not going down wearing the right political pin or anything like that. Someone who articulated something that I'd thought of, but put it into words in a way that I couldn't. If I can do that, then I'm satisfied.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think there is a place for people like you and me because we can do that, you know, and that is something productive. It's something helpful for everyone else. Feel free to skip my EMJ super chat. I think I was wrong about him saying Jew haters, but he did attack SSPX and accuse them of promoting Nazism and Hitler worship a few years before he started focusing on Jews himself. Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me. He seems like a very EMJ, this is. He does seem like a very doctrinaire guy. And I can imagine him being very, you know, staunchly against that kind of stuff and then getting into it. But I don't want to besmirch him or whatever because I don't have any real beef against him and I don't know enough about him to say anything reliably. I can only go by my own experience of him and, you know, everyone saw that.
Reminds me of the nuns I grew up with. He's just an unpleasant, cranky person. So I have my biases as far as that goes too.
I can understand that. Pure Nomad says, good chat, Woz. Enjoyed listening to both of you. Well, thank you very much. So I guess we can wrap this one up here. It's been a lively discussion, but I'm starting to get tired.
I can imagine. Right? I don't know how you do this. It's like, you must be a masochist. There's no way. Like, what is it, like 8 hours a day for like 3 weeks? Be nuts.
Yeah, and it's too. I realized that I've booked too many this year. I ended up adding two nights at the end because so many people were asking to appear, and I think I shouldn't have done that. So next year I'm going to be more ruthless about saying no to people because I think I'll be okay. I think I'll be able to do it, but I just hope that, you know, the last week of it isn't going to be substandard.
See, as autistic as I am, I can take the time to wrap it up signal much better than some people.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Okay, well, this has been a really enjoyable chat, so thank you for doing it. Merry Christmas, Jim.
I might be in a good mood for 1 week, but wait till next year.
Okay. All right, well, I'll be back in half an hour with Dangerfield. So that will be another laid back sort of stream. And okay, I'll see you then. In the meantime, thank you, Jim Goad, for appearing on Millennial, and bye bye for now.
Millennial Woz has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woz font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the white stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.